I'm standing on top of a mountain in the center of the Afghan capital, Kabul. I was born in this city. I was going to school in this city. I went to university in Kabul. I consider myself a Kabuli girl. I love Kabul. I love when I see positive changes in it. And I miss the good days of Kabul. My name is Mina Bakhtash. I'm an Afghan journalist working for the Pashto and Dari service of the BBC. I think that around the world, the name of Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan, just means war. But not to me. My Kabul, the Kabul of 60s, 70s, and 80s, was a beautiful, peaceful, and happy place. I have come to Kabul this year with a personal goal. I want to understand what all these years of war have done to my city, my family, my old workplace, and my old friends. I wonder what the real cost of war has been for Kabul. And after more than 8 years of a fledgling democracy, is there any sign of return to the glory days of this once beautiful place? Mom? Mom? My mom and dad still live in Kabul. Dad's a professor of chemistry and mom is a nurse. They are among the few thousand Kabulis who stayed here and lived through all the upheavals. They are now in their 70s.
It's my cousin Nazir. He's from Netherlands.
Yeah, do you heard about the explosion?
Just that morning, a suicide car bomb had exploded on a main junction near the parliament, killing at least 18 people.
It was a terrible explosion. The bus was on fire and nobody could rescue them.
The house is full of visitors today. Cousins and aunts come and go, but almost all of us now live abroad. It's a feature of this city. Between the mid-70s and the late 90s, a total of 8 million people left the country. And most of the Kabulis never came back. I remember the first time I really felt Kabul shaking to the core. It was in 1973, when in a peaceful military coup, the monarchy was toppled. I can remember so vividly that one afternoon I was returning from school and sitting in a bus, witnessing all the excitement and hope in the faces of fellow passengers. I took out my notebook and wrote my first poem. Then, in the 80s, the battles between the Mujahideen and the Soviet-backed governments began. It was like hell, but the worst was to come. In the 90s, civil war, rockets raining down on Kabul. The personal cost for my family was enormous. I lost my brother, and my mom lost her brothers. Mom doesn't find it easy to talk about what happened to our family.
During the Civil War, my dear, there was nothing. Schools were closed, shops were closed, there was no one on the streets, everyone had left. Our old house was hit by a rocket and it burned down. One night a pregnant woman came to us for help. She gave birth on our doorstep. I took care of her and her baby, and all the time the rockets were landing all around us. Once, a group of Jamiat people were surrounded in the base next door to our house. I knew they had nothing, but I had flour at home, and so I made bread for them.
I'm amazed that mom was making bread for a group of Mujahideen who could have killed her son.
Look, my dear, it's not the place of a mother or a woman or even a human being to think that way. If they did kill my son, it will be avenged by God, and God will punish them. But at that moment, I could not see a group of young fighters surrounded by other fighters going hungry. So I passed them bread and water over the wall.
The war finally ended in 1996, and the city and the people, now weakened and tired of conflict, sought refuge in the Stone Age. When the Taliban came, Mom was no longer allowed to go out to work. And as the schools for girls had closed, she decided to set up a class at home.
In those days, there were rumors that a number of underground courses were being run in Kabul. And that attracted the Taliban's attention. One day, my class was stormed by 11 armed Talibs. They accused me of teaching Christianity. I told them to check our books. They did, and could not find anything other than normal school subjects.
Mom still teaches at home, in a room at the bottom of our garden, but now she has girls and boys in her class. I can see the changes and ups and downs of Kabul in the faces of my mom and dad. I can read every wound of Kabul in their faces. I can see in their eyes what they have seen through all those years. I brought some pictures of my mom and dad to my children. And the first question they both asked me was, why Granddad doesn't smile? You can't find a single picture of him smiling. We are in the corridors of the Afghan radio and TV. Salam. In the 80s, I used to work as a TV presenter for Afghan radio and TV. I remember these corridors so well. They were so vibrant and glorious, like any other TV and radio station around the world. But today, these long, empty corridors look like they are full of ghosts. All the paint is peeling off the walls. There is even a bird nesting in the corner. You can't compare this building to any other radio and TV buildings, even, I can say, inside Kabul. Wahid Nazari is an old friend of mine. He is a man of cinema and was the head of Afghan film years ago. At the time of making this documentary, he was the general director of the state radio and TV. When I went to visit him in my old place of work, he was so nostalgic about Afghan cinema.
As the head of Afghan film, I remember I could do so much. We were really well supported by the government. We were producing 6 films every year. We are not back to that level yet. We had a proper cinema then. Everything worked really well. But right now, state radio and TV has lots of rivals. Private radio and TV stations. And they are the ones who get most of the foreign aid. You see, when we were the only radio and TV station, all attention was focused on us. Back then, all coups, takeovers and big changes started and ended here, behind our microphones. We had our fame and our prestige.
Nazari, being that important, as you said, that every major change in the country is being announced from this building, it makes it a bit vulnerable as well. During the process, it has been bombarded.
Absolutely. This is the most vulnerable institution because everybody wanted to start their takeover from here. They wanted their voices on our microphones. I think it's natural.
One of my favorite places to visit each time I'm in Kabul is Radio and TV Archive. Listening to old melodies works on me like a time machine. Today, I went to the radio archive and I listened to one of these patriotic songs. I know that the singer is alive. I know he is still talented. He still has got a lot to give to this country. But nobody's appreciating him anymore. I asked the guy in archive, I said, in the last 10 years, how many patriotic songs have you recorded? And he said, none. And why? Once upon a time, we were so emotional. We loved our country. We were making lovely songs about it. There were lovely words for those songs. And nowadays... I'm sorry. The same goes with everything. I don't know why we are like this. What make people to act like this, to destroy their own home and rob it? Why don't realize that it was a country? Everybody was so proud of it. The biggest thing that I miss is that feeling of belonging to a country and cherish that country. And I mean, giving up your own interests, the interests of your family or political party or tribe, for the good of the national interests. That thing doesn't exist. The feeling of ownership is gone. Nobody can deny the level of destruction in Kabul. Palaces, gardens, state buildings, and ordinary houses, they all look like wounded people. Some recovered, and many still in pain. Most of the historical buildings were hit by rockets, looted and destroyed. Their handmade carpets stolen. Their marble tabletops, encrusted with precious stones, were smashed. Grand buildings built by Soviets were destroyed for the sins of their builders. Makhdoom Rahin is the Afghan Minister of Culture. He was born and brought up in this city, and he has fond memories of what he calls the golden decade of Kabul.
Those days, Kabul was different. 70s, we can call it a golden decade, when life was really delightful, when nobody worried about anything. And that was a democracy decade too. We were young students and participating in all demonstrations. We were testing and learning and experiencing democracy. The decade of freedom of speech, decade of art, decade of beautiful songs.
Why people like our generation from 70s and 80s, we all the time think about the past?
This is natural. After that decade, a lot of things happened and life became miserable. And it's natural thinking about the past. Maybe everybody does it everywhere in the world, but we do it more than others because we lost lots of things. If we think about all what happened in Kabul, then sorrow will prevail all of our activities or the way of thinking. So it's more beautiful to think about life, about new generation, how to help.
In 2002, I was taken to my school by the BBC. A BBC friend asked, she wanted to see a reaction perhaps on somebody's face after all those changes. First of all, we couldn't find the road to my school. And we found it with lots of difficulties. And then, as soon as I entered the school, there was nothing at all other than a pile of bricks. Nothing at all. And I just suddenly remembered the brother that I had lost to war, uncles that I had lost to war. And I asked them that I need a minute on my own. So I went away and I cried loudly. And I cried for my school, I cried for Kabul, I cried for my brother, and I cried for my uncles.
Yeah.
It was the hardest trip that I made that year, coming back to Kabul. Now, in 2010, I head back to my school again in the hope that something has changed.
And here we are at the gates. Oh gosh, I'm shaking inside again. Right now I'm waiting for Shinkai. She is in MP now. We are gonna go together. I don't want to go through those gates again on my own. Yeah.
Shinkai is an old school friend.
Oh, she's there. She's there.
I met her after how many years? We could live from grade 12.
Let's don't say it, because that will show our age. Can we go inside school? Do we need permission?
Yes, Doc.
Yeah, by Joseph and Tashako. Hi. There should be Kodakistan, the nursery. Yes, it is. Let's go down there. Shall we?
Salam.
I'm sorry, there is a bunch of five beautiful girls behind us. They're tiny, tiny, tiny. They're almost like miniatures. Wow, thank you. We talked a lot about things that we are missing. Shinkajan is in a position to talk about today's Kabul and if she is optimistic about it. What do you think? She's deep, deep in thoughts right now.
Lots of changes came, some for good, some for bad. The bad things, definitely, we see the effect of war in this country. Lots of people just fled the country and went out. But maybe today is a good thing that girls are more aware. They have access to different informations and they live in a different world.
Are you optimistic about the future? Do you think things will get better and better?
Maybe I'm the only woman. I'm always optimistic, and I think we passed the worst time. And the type of life we experienced during civil war in this country, and also during Taliban time, which women were absolutely excluded from their social and political active life, I think we passed that period. I don't think that the worst time will come then. We are in a transitional period. Lots of security problem, but I'm sure things will go for better. Zang Rakhsat. This is the bell to go home.
I leave my school feeling very good. Its classrooms and gardens are restored and rebuilt. And hundreds of young girls are proud to be educated in it. The noise of reconstruction can be heard all around the city. New buildings are mushrooming everywhere, some planned and permitted and some not. I think I have an immediate negative reaction to all changes in Kabul. I don't like the new buildings that are springing up all over the place, over-decorated. They don't belong. But there are some good new things as well. There are some historic buildings restored, new residential estates built, some new roads and streets, 24-hour supermarkets selling everything you could possibly want, at a price, of course, and some Afghan and foreign businesses are flourishing. Life is getting back to something like normality. But it is not normality. There are still too many uncertainties, too many questions, and too much instability. Young Afghans who were educated abroad are coming back to Kabul to improve their prospects and make a difference in the country they would like to call home. Yusuf Barukzai is almost the same age as my son. Like my son, he was brought up in the UK. But he came back to Kabul 3 years ago to work for a major telecoms company. I wonder if people like him are the future of Afghanistan. But so far, it's not been an easy ride. How come you decided to come back?
I've always wanted to come back to Afghanistan. And it was always my father's dream. And in 2001, he passed away from cancer. But his last wish was for me to come to Afghanistan. So that's the reason why I came, and I really tried to accommodate myself and to adapt in this society.
So how is your adaptation going on?
It's not the utopia that I thought it was, but we still see those glimpses of the old past, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done for Afghanistan to be what Afghanistan was 30 years ago. It is very hard.
So tell me how.
From every aspect. At morning when you wake up and you go, you know there's danger. You know that you can be kidnapped very easily, especially if they know that you have a job. And if you have a family, not only do you think for yourself, but you also think for them as well. You know that there's corruption within the government. You know that because of the corruption, you cannot rely on governmental laws. Water, for instance, you have to kind of keep your water in buckets. Maybe for 2 days you won't have any water. Or you have to go outside and pump from a well, you know. That's something quite new. Yes, it is quite exciting when you come down here. You'll do it for the first time. The second time, by the third time, I think you'll probably be a bit annoyed. My family is my mom, my wife, my child, my sister, everyone else. They're back at home. I'm only living here alone. It's very hard.
But still you are continuing.
Yes.
So what are the goods?
For me, it's something for myself. There's a part of me that is trying to find my father within Afghanistan. There's a part of me that is trying to find home. And I'm also torn apart by the UK, where my wife, my family, my friends, everyone else lives. So I'm not sure if the problem is me or I have some serious issues. I need some serious counseling.
Today's Kabul is not Kabul of 60s, 70s and 80s. It has changed. It is wounded. But it is alive and surviving. Hundreds of Yusefs, Shinkais, Nazaris and Rahins have come back and trying to do almost an impossible job. Some looking for the restoring of glory of the past, and others try to create a new one. And for me, one question is solved. Being nostalgic and craving for the past is not working. The way forward is naturally towards future. And me and my city have to move on.
The program was produced and presented by Mina Baktash of the BBC's Pashto and Dari service.